Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to the family with
Doug Sprinthal,
Alex Brant-Bernard Rasmussen,
co-host Catherine Brandt,
Andy Brant-Bernard,
and Cassie Schrader.
And we'll be right back with the family. Michael Bryant, Brad Sean Bryant, what's the latest?
Well, basically, we're trying to represent people who have been hurt, then talk to them before they talk to an adjuster. One of the key points is to make sure you know what your rights are before you start talking to the insurance company and they start asking you questions or they try to settle your case early and cheap.
Well, what's interesting to me is, you know, a lot of people have fear of attorneys. It makes them very uncomfortable. They get nervous about it. What should I do? I've known Michael for years and years now, and I would highly recommend you. So that should be good enough for everybody, because I don't endorse people who are dirtbags.
Well, I appreciate that. But I guess the key is people think I'll charge them if I talk to them.
Right.
So a lot of people call me up. It's like, how much is this going to cost if you call me back? Like, you want me to call you back? How much will that cost? I don't charge people. The only way I get paid is if we recover, if we get money from the other side. And there's a lot of people I talk to that I never get paid for that are just part of giving them advice to make sure they know what they can do and what their rights are.
And your record's terrific as well, we should point out.
Well, it works. It's been good.
It's been good, ladies and gentlemen.
It's been good.
And how do they contact you?
And, either through our website, which is MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com, MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com, or at 800-770-7008.
Michael Bryant, Bradshaw and Bryant.
There it is. I'm up now. Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Sprinthal, Walzer Automotive Group, Walzer.com.
Well, what are we going to talk about now? I'm completely unprepared. No, we'll talk about the new Walzer Care. This is really a cool thing. It replaced warranty for life. It's a 10-year, 150,000-mile powertrain warranty. Unlike warranty for life, it also has roadside assistance. So if you lock your keys in your car, you get a flat tire, run out of gas, 24/7, somebody will come out and help you. This is no charge on the Minnesota vehicles. So check out Walzer.com for more details about Walzer Care.
That's the whole shooting match?
Well, I could go on and on. Do you want to do 45 minutes on rust proofing?
No, you already did that this morning.
Okay, sorry.
Walzer Automotive Group, Walzer.com. Still the highest paid dead celebrity in the world.
Really?
Michael Jackson.
A lot of good it does him.
Made, I believe, $65 million last year.
Did he really? I wonder what John Lennon made, do you know?
$30 million.
Ugh. Slacker.
Slacker.
Barely.
But when you think
anything about
that, he's only getting a fourth. And Mike's getting it all, so.
Mike.
No, that's just what Lennon made.
Right.
Yeah, so Lennon gets all of his money. Because he has his private, you know, when the band broke up and all that stuff. So, you know, we got this whole thing covered. Don't worry about a thing. But, yes, Michael Jackson is the highest paid dead celebrity for several years in a row now. And you know who's number three for several years in a row now? And I mean decades.
Elvis or Jimi Hendrix?
Nope, Elvis is number two.
Okay.
Number three is Charles Schulz. Peanuts.
Oh, really?
Yep.
At
least he deserves it.
Tonight, the Great Pumpkin, baby. He'll be making even more money tonight.
Although we don't have television anymore, so I'm not exactly sure how we're going to watch it.
Let's come over to our house.
I'm not doing that.
You don't have a television?
We have a television,
yes.
But we don't have cable or any type
you're going
of
off the
TV
the grid
thing.
Do you have any like Roku things or anything like that?
We have Apple TV.
That should be on there. Right?
It's got to be on there.
I know, and some Hulu stuff plays live as well.
Hulu.
Well, and we have that through our Apple TV. I wonder if The Great Pumpkin's on Hulu.
Yeah, we'll find it. It's got to be on there somewhere.
It's got to be someplace.
You know what? It's probably.
I might have to pay $29.99 for it this time of year.
It's probably on YouTube and you could just watch it.
Yeah,
that's true.
Most likely.
True.
Of course, we have it at the house, but we can't transfer it over.
No.
Unfortunately. So, last night we're sitting around. Let me see if I can track this down while we're doing
this.
They
don't want people sharing shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
I thought they limited it to two other people. You could share with two other people, but that was it.
Can they be on your... I don't know about that. I have no idea. I've never even tried to share.
I haven't either.
Oh, I think it's because you can... Yeah, if you've got a family planner... I don't know. Forget it. I don't know anything. What are you doing, Tom?
I'm just trying to get on Facebook because...
Why?
Once again, after 7 years, I'm getting back on Facebook.
I know. I got messages. Is Tom really back on Facebook?
What?
Was he hacked?
I texted him. I thought he'd been hacked for sure.
Well, because he was hacked on... He wasn't hacked, but somebody opened up a fake account on Twitter and
was like,
I'm back after whatever years.
Oh, did they?
Glad to be here.
Was I a total a-hole on that one?
Probably.
Hard to believe. Hard to believe that happened to me. Anyway, yeah, we're just because Facebook has done a great job on our video, right, Andy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you've been looking at it too?
Yep.
So far, so good.
Really, thousands of views, as a matter of fact. So that's pretty good, man.
I think it's a better way to just reach more people
because
it pops up in their news feed.
Yeah, because they're already friends, right?
Yeah, friends, or if they like the page.
Okay.
And you can even set it to where every time we go live on Facebook, you'll get a notification.
Right.
And stuff like that. So it's just easier, you know, because YouTube, you have to go to YouTube, you have to search it up unless you subscribe.
Right.
And then, you know, so it doesn't like pop up in your face unlike it does on Facebook. So. Yeah.
I want it to pop up.
That's all. Do you want to look at yourself? Is that the plan here?
He's going to go home and watch it.
Look, I want this to be bigger. How do I make this bigger? Oh, that's because you sent it back to me. I can't. There's something I want to show everybody in the studio here because something happened yesterday. It was really cool.
Next on Tom Struggles with Technology.
I'm not struggling with technology. It just sucks. Okay, so we're watching.
It's not me. It's the technology.
Yeah. We're watching. Catherine and I are watching Wheel of Fortune last night. We watching Wheel of Fortune.
They're
Wheel
Watchers.
Jeopardy.
Wheel Watchers.
We're Wheel Watchers.
On occasion, we do. Yes.
And the final puzzle comes up. And the woman wins on the final puzzle. She nails it, guesses it, she wins. Final puzzle is...
I don't have my glasses.
Adorable Fawn.
Ah, look at that, the final puzzle. Yeah. Adorable Fawn. Andy, do you see it?
Bonnie!
Tom was so excited. He was like, I've got... He called Alex right away, and he's trying to show her the TV.
I know, I'm like, you guys are so old.
Can you read it? Can you read it now? And then I was like, flip the camera, push this button and flip the camera, and then look at it through the lens. And then
he's like, I don't know where the lens is.
And then he was like, and then he flipped it to himself, and he was like, can you see it now? And I was like, Dad, you're the oldest man in the scene.
No, I'm just the most disinterested man in digital because it's ruining everyone's life. Even our former president, Barack Obama, and I agree with him 100%, and we've been talking about this on this show and the morning show for 2 years now. So thank you, President Obama, for joining our side of things. We're going to reach out to him and have him on.
Yeah, he's going to be on Car Selling Secrets and talk about Volkswagens and stuff. You know, he actually started all this mess.
What?
Well, when you think about his 08 campaign, he was the most digitally savvy politician ever. I mean, he was the first guy that got the Twitter connections going.
You're
and the
right.
Republicans going, what the hell's going on?
You're
and
right.
8 years later, Donald Trump says, here, hold my beer, watch this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, back when I did voiceover in Chicago, we used to hang out, but then I started calling him B.O. and he didn't like it. So he wouldn't hang out with me anymore. Barack Obama's name has been back in the headlines this week, but not over the drama on Capitol Hill or the Democratic primary. Instead, it's over a warning he issued young people about the dangers of ideological purity and woke culture. Could not agree with the former president more. Now, are they former presidents or are they always presidents?
I think they always call them president.
I think so. He'll always be President Obama.
Yeah.
What he said while speaking during a forum at the Obama Foundation Summit in Chicago on Tuesday, President Obama declared, this idea of purity and you're never compromised and you're always politically woke and all that stuff, you should get over that quickly. Per the Hill, the world is messy, there are ambiguities, people who do really good stuff have flaws. Obama said he is seeing a troubling trend on college campuses in particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just steal it from the Tom Bernard podcast, that's all I'm saying. There is a sense sometimes of the way we make change is to be as judgmental as possible about other people. If I tweet or hashtag about how you didn't do something right or use the wrong verb, then I can sit back and feel pretty good about myself because, man, you see how woke I was? But that's not activism, he added. If all you're doing is casting stones, you're probably not going to get that far.
Wow.
And now, of course, all the losers on Twitter are calling him...
Well, no, he's a loser.
Oh, they're going to probably turn on him.
He's the all-right president, and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, they're going to turn on him.
Because that's how they are.
Yeah.
What do you mean he's all-right?
Alt-right.
Right.
Oh, now Obama's the alt-right president?
Well, everyone's alt-right if you don't believe with them. Or believe
they're
what
going
they
after
believe.
Obama.
You know, he's really? He's probably just pissed at his daughters.
Well, maybe.
Because they're in college, right?
Oh.
That's a possibility. It's true. They're actually going after Obama on Twitter. I just, what more could he do for you people? And by you people, all you far lefties, he did everything for you, and now you're going to turn on him.
Well,
it's
nothing,
never enough.
That's never enough.
Nothing
right.
puts the brakes on, you know, a freight train of crazy than common sense.
Right.
And they don't like that because the freight train of crazy is what they're just having so much fun with it right now.
The Washington Post notes that Obama has achieved the rare feat of earning praise from the left and the right. That's not rare. I'm sorry. Jesus, I wish they'd. Could you stop trying to divide the nation, Washington Post and CNN and Fox and all the rest of you? Calm down. In any case, he's receiving praise from the left and the right. For instance, conservative commenter Ann Coulter tweeted, "Good for Obama." Ann Coulter. Well, he's right. He's 100% right.
Medicine. Yeah, but she hates everybody.
Well, she hates everybody. That's true. Well, I used to hate
everybody.
She's
a weird woman.
I'm happy when, you know, people can actually see
that's
somebody
right.
that makes sense.
That's
and
why I'm surprised, though. But anyway.
That's great.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
I was just
you're not
in
interrupted
shock
at all.
There for a second.
It only gets better. Good for Obama. Pro-Obama sentiment is so rare coming from her that she felt the need to add, "I'm not being sarcastic."
So that's she has phenomenal. A sense of humor and can compliment somebody.
We've never seen that sense of humor before, I can guarantee you that.
Somebody stole her.
Another conservative voice, Tommy Lahren, said on Fox News that Obama is, quote, looking like the voice of reason.
Yes.
In praise at CNN, Chris Chalitza. Is that how you say his name or her name? Chris
Sounds
Chalitza.
Great.
The rise of cancel culture, particularly on the left and particularly on social media, particularly on the left, that's the only place it is. What are you talking about? Is one of the defining hallmarks of our culture in the post-Obama presidency. He writes, say or tweet one thing perceived as wrong and your critics want your head.
So I'm just asking for maybe somebody that's a listener that doesn't understand cancel culture. What the hell is that? I don't know.
What is cancel culture? When I talk to you and you disagree with me or you don't agree with everything I say, I try to ruin your life.
Oh.
I mean, step out of line on social media and you're over. Your
yep.
career is over. Your life is over.
They will literally try to end your career. They'll try to ruin your life.
And they've done it. They've
ruined
plenty
people.
Of
yeah.
times.
They didn't know there was a term for that.
Yep.
I guess I'm not.
There's always
cancel culture.
Always a term.
Oligarch irritated by agonized youth wrote one on Twitter using unhappy... User unhappy with Obama's observations, and at the Federalist, John Daniel Davidson thinks that the seeds of cancel culture were planted during the Obama presidency, partly by Obama himself. So it's all well and good that Obama's concerned about the corrosive effects of cancel culture and militant wokeness. Militant wokeness. Oh, God, I hate you. But his warnings and reprimands are a day late and a dollar short. The woke left isn't listening, not even to Obama. They're not listening to anybody but themselves because it's all about them. Me, 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 more me now. This is all about me. That's what the far left is now. Not the left, not Democrats, but the far left. It's all me, me, me. It's all about me. Everything's about me. And let me ask you a question because you were around it for your whole life. I said this morning that about 95% of professors in colleges around America do a really great job, just like everything else in our culture. About 5% of people are way, way out of their minds.
Yep, I would agree with that.
That's true.
I mean, it's the same in any profession.
In any profession. That's
cops
exactly
are the
right.
same way.
Yep.
Most cops
yep.
do a great job. They put their lives on the line every day and really don't get paid very well for it. And a few of them are just complete meatheads. It's no different in a college.
You're absolutely right. There are 5% of those professors that love to sit and tell everybody because they got pushed down or they got their underwear pulled up their butt, their mama didn't hug them enough, that the whole world has to pay. That's all it is to me. I mean, these professors are such candy asses. And again, I'm talking about the 5% that they're going to try to change the way your brain works.
Well, it's a very sheltered, cloistered community. Yeah. It's.
What do you mean, Doug's house? Thank you very much. Great to
I
be
had
here.
A psych professor in college named Jerry Weiss. Interestingly enough, his brother was in Jay and the Americans. He was from Brooklyn. And I remember the last class I took from him, he would never be able to do this in this day and age. But he comes up and he goes, all right, here's the deal. Everybody in this room, you get an A. Your job in the next 6 weeks is to not fuck it up.
Wow.
That's a good way to look at it.
I love it.
It works for me, man. That does work for me.
But yeah, he grew up with Robert De Niro, too. He lived down the street from him.
Oh, is that right?
Interesting cat. This was back when Robert De Niro was up and coming, so it was, I think Raging Bull might have just come out then.
And Thinking Clearly? I think Raging Bull, he might have taken a few too many to the head. I don't know what happened to him. He's nuts.
I think the beginning of the end was when he signed off on doing Dirty Grandpa. I watched that.
Oh, God.
That looks horrible. God,
so weird.
Well, in the first
Why
5 minutes,
would you watch
he's
that?
Like, well, I was on an airplane. It was the only thing to watch.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I've watched lots of movies I'd never see in my life if it hadn't been for Dirty Plane movies. Yeah.
One of the scenes, he's waxing the banana, looking at porn, waiting for his grandson
waxing
to pick
the
him
banana,
up.
Catherine.
Well, I was trying to think of a more delicate way to put it.
Yes, it is delicate. You've always been a very delicate guy.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people say that.
But let me just say this. I appreciate the courage of Barack Obama. I appreciate his honesty. I appreciate him coming forward and saying, look, this is way out of line. To destroy someone's life because he doesn't agree with you is insane. So I'm really glad that he stepped up. Because I don't know of many other politicians that would do that.
No, nobody wants to put their neck out anymore.
It's also a sign that he can't be elected to any other office or he's never going to run out of money.
Well, I think they're doing okay.
I think they're doing okay.
Netflix money has been coming in handy.
Yeah, it has,
They got a $60 million advance on their books.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Which they've made back on Michelle's. He hasn't even published his yet.
Yeah, Michelle's has been sounding like a mad woman. Yep. Now, she was talking about White Flight.
Ah.
Michelle talking about witnessing White Flight when she was a kid. Catherine and I were just talking about White Flight the other day. Because where we live is right between where she grew up and where I grew up. So we're about, what would you say, about three blocks from the city border to North Minneapolis?
Yeah.
Maybe four.
Maybe four blocks.
Yeah.
But we moved toward the city. We were living out in the country, and we moved toward the city. Apparently, most honkies moved away from the city because they're so woke and understanding and wonderful. But I don't want to live anywhere near you black people.
Do you remember the band called the Bus Boys? Remember
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They did a song called There Goes the Neighborhood. It was about white people moving into
exactly.
the city.
Exactly.
And one of the lines was, I don't want to live the next to no Carol and Bob. The inner city is too close to my job.
Carol and Bob.
That is amazing, though. Yeah, she was talking a lot about White Flight and how... By coincidence, you and I were just talking about this yesterday, that, oh, you know, we love everybody, and we just want, people are all the same, and we want to live together, except I'm going to live about 25 miles west of
you. That's right.
You phony bastards. I hate that so much. They know exactly what's going on. First of all.
You know, it'd be really funny.
What?
Go to Woodhill Country Club and see if you can find any coexist bumper stickers.
Yeah, coexist, baby. Ira, speaking of phony. About 25 years. When did the whole gas crisis thing happen?
The first one was in the early 70s.
Yeah. Yes. That was during Carter administration.
Yeah,
this was the second.
I think it was 72 or 74 was the first.
So his was the second.
So it would have been Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford.
Yeah, Ford. And then there was the gas crisis in the
late
70s.
Late 70s, yep.
Okay, this would have been early 80s. So what would that have been?
We had gas crises for a long time.
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. But I remember pulling into the Woodhill. Woodhill, for people who don't know, is a very, very upscale, very wealthy country club.
It's where Paul Walzer plays golf.
Yes. What does that tell you right there?
Uh-oh. Might not want to pick on his country club. Change of name.
But I remember pulling in, and I was driving a Cadillac Alante. So that would have been, about 87 or something like that? 86, something like that. I pull in, I'm driving a Cadillac Alante, and every car parked by a billionaire was a Dodge Dart. I'm going to show I'm just one of the people. God, it was so phony. Where'd you hide your Rolls Royce? Because I know you got one.
Yeah.
That whole white people, rich white people deciding what is important and what isn't makes me laugh. I don't know.
No wonder you hate politicians.
Because they're all rich white people.
I'm pretty sure the rich people in every country decide what happens.
Well, you're right. But in any case, congratulations to President Obama. I really appreciate your position because you make complete 100% sense, and I really appreciate you stepping up and taking a shot. Oh, it's that. God, we got to take a break. My God, I didn't know it was that late. We'll be right back.
Waxing poetic.
Tom Bernard here, and with me is the CEO of North American Banking Company, Michael Bilski. Tell me, Michael, I was reading on your website that one of your bankers has worked with a customer for more than 30 years. It's a long time for any business relationship. Is that common?
Not only 30 years, but two generations. Our great client, Northland Fastening Systems. 30 years is definitely not common for a lot of bankers, but Brad has developed a relationship with that trusted customer that has allowed them to show steady growth every year they've been together. Building the relationship of trust is what we do best. It allows us to make quick deals that benefit them and all of our business customers. The cool thing is that it gives us a chance to be more than your banker, hopefully a partner, and maybe even a friend.
I have never liked you, by the way. Why not bank with my banker, North American Banking Company, a better banking experience? Member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Thanks, friend.
And you are?
Real nice.
Chuck Knobloch.
Chuck Knobloch. If you're one of those folks out there still putting up with contact lenses or dealing with glasses, think, just for a moment, what would it be like to wake up to a clear morning and experience your day with all the freedom LASIK brings? Well, I'm living proof. That dream can come true. Tom Bernard here for Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract. With the new year right around the corner, it's time to set your sights on 2020 vision. Get $500 off LASIK through the end of the year at Whiting Clinic. If you're like me, not a big fan of glasses and contacts, then it's time for you to find out if you're a candidate for LASIK. Call 855-554-2020 or visit whitingclinic.com for your free LASIK consultation. The great people at Whiting Clinic will take fantastic care of you, just like they did for me. Imagine 2020, buy 2020, and let 2020 be your best year yet with $500 off LASIK at Whiting Clinic.
Offer expires December 31st, 2019. Both eyes only, cannot be combined. Results may vary.
Is this Howlin' Wolf?
Yes, it is.
Love Howlin' Wolf. I put a spell on you.
We listened to all the Halloween-y music last night while carving pumpkins.
Oh, did you?
We just watched Hocus Pocus last night, so there you go.
That's a good movie.
By Focus?
No.
One of the great songs ever. Remember that
Barbara
song?
Barbra Streisand?
Yeah, it's Hocus yodeling and a flute
yodelo,
solo.
Yodelo, 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 yodelo.
I just love that Bette Midler's character in Hocus Pocus, the witch, is named Winifred, because you don't hear that very often.
Yep.
She had quite a bit bigger nose than you did, I noticed. What the hell are you doing over there? The Halloween ghost just beat on the table. Ladies and gentlemen, Vince Wilson, our very special guest. How are you, Vince?
Okay, kids.
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing extremely well. There apparently are ghosts banging on the table here. I heard them anyway. Weird and unusual facts about the death of Edgar Allan Poe and other creepy legends and lore of All Hallows Eve, also known as Halloween, and stop pronouncing it Halloween. It's Halloween, do it
Halloween.
Right, or get out. Right, Vince?
I agree. Well, my Baltimore accent forces me to say Halloween I guess there's a sort of argument for Halloween because it is All Hallows Eve, the Eve of All Saints Day.
Hallowed ground, yeah, not hallowed ground. It's hallowed ground. Let's get it right.
Let's get rid of this guy. Right. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Vince, I got to tell you one thing. I saw your name up.
I'm signing off, Dan. Have a good Halloween.
You're fine. Oh, no. Don't worry about it. Right. I saw your name and I went, that's a great name for like a neighborhood thug. I think it'd be great. But hey, man, you pissed me off. I'm going to tell Vince Wilson. It sounds like a tough guy name, don't you think?
Vince is a tough guy
I have a bad reputation for being a nice guy, so.
I'm sure that's true. I'm sure it's absolutely true. So I've asked many people this question, and nobody knows why, but why did the Beatles at the end of the song say Edgar Allan Duck? Why did they say that?
I have no idea.
Why would they do that? But one, I can't remember which song it is. I don't think it's Strawberry Fields or it's one of those. But
they
John
smoked,
Lennon
they
goes.
They smoked a fair amount of pot.
Well, then. That's true. Yeah, some hallucinogen.
I'm sure it had something to do with drugs.
Edgar Allan Duck. Weird and unusual facts about the death of Edgar Allan Poe and other creepy legends and lore of All Hallows Eve. Vince, I'm turning it over to you because it's Halloween and I'm excited. I'm very excited to hear the story.
I'm actually very excited, too. And today I will actually be at the Edgar Allan Poe house in Baltimore this afternoon.
Really?
That's stopping by. That's correct. And I'm at the Haunted Lord Baltimore Hotel as I'm speaking to you from one of the hotel rooms here. Often represented as one of the top 10 most haunted hotels in the United States, if not in the top 5 list.
Do you hang out at the street where they found Dylan Thomas in the gutter? Do you hang out there too? That was was in Baltimore, wasn't it?
I think that was. Yep.
Yeah,
it that could help us actually segue into one of the first myths about Edgar Allan Poe.
Perfect.
Is that Poe was not found in the gutter.
No.
All right.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, so that's a very popular myth for some reason.
It is. Yeah.
So did he have a troubled life? Yes. Was occasionally morose and dark? Of course. But he was also said to be the life of the party. People often invited him to do recitals of his poetry and stories at popular parties. Politicians, well-to-do people, the wealthy would often invite him over to have dinner and do some poetry readings. We're going to find out during the course of the afternoon that a lot of the things you're thinking of about Edgar Allan Poe, I didn't mean that for derime either, but a lot of things you think you know are not true and were actually started by one of his literary enemies. In fact, his quintessential literary enemy. So Poe was not found in the gutter. He was not found in the street. He was disheveled and delirious. He was found in front of Gunner's Hall in Baltimore City, in the area now known as Little Italy, at the corner of Exeter and Lombard Street, which is around the 900 block of Lombard Street in Little Italy now. So if you were to go there, stand at that intersection, you're within feet of or very least yards away from where Edgar Allan Poe was found in this disheveled, delirious state. He was taken to the hospital. He lasted about 3 days and died on October 7th, 1849, at only 40 years old.
Oh man.
Yeah, that's right. He was born in 1809, January 19th. When the saddest aspect, it was very sad. He was only 40 years old when he passed away, and he died under mysterious circumstances because to this day, his medical records are missing. All right, they just disappeared, and we have no idea what truthfully killed Edgar Allan Poe. Although there are theories, so Poe, as you know, it's just hard not to rhyme that O sound.
Poe, as you know, can go.
You know, that's right. The Edgar Allan Poe. He had very long moments of depression. He did drink occasionally, but he was not an alcoholic. It's another myth associated with Edgar Allan Poe. And take a look at the time period in history. Okay, this is a time period in history in which you woke up in the morning, had beer for breakfast. That was not unusual. I understand some people do that, but it's considered unusual today.
Yeah.
Back then, you had beer for breakfast. You had, you went off to lunch break, and you might have had more beer or brandy or scotch or something like that. And then for dinner, you had brandy or wine for dinner. All right, so you drank all day long, basically. I mean, with intermittent, breaks. Maybe some tea and coffee in there somewhere. But for the most part, people were used to drinking back then, and you were a drunk or an alcoholic if you, fell down the street drunk, or you threw up all the time, or you couldn't get to work, and you're basically homeless. That's when he considered you an alcoholic. If you could not function at all, you were drunk at that point. But the But up until that point, in which you go, when you went over that, what they consider that was the limit for drinking.
Sounds like Florida.
Once you went over that, then, yeah, then you, yeah, that's right.
He just starts laughing. Okay.
Yeah, then you were drunk. But by today's standards, you were Poe was certainly not alcoholic. In fact, the last 2 years of his life, he was a member of the temperance movement, the precursor to what later become prohibition.
Huh. Yeah, I did not know that. I absolutely did not know that. He, why do you think it is that so many great, you know, writers like Dylan Thomas and Edgar Allan Poe, and there's actually a long list, came to Baltimore?
Well, it was a major port in communications area. So the port of Baltimore, you had sources coming all from around the country. There was a lot of political movements here. There was a military presence here with Annapolis very close by. It was a major trade area. So there's a lot of ideas. Of course, there was Johns Hopkins. There was University of Maryland. There was it was a major area for technology, science, and stories, and a lot of history, of course. The War of 1812, very prominent here in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
The Star Spangled Banner was written here, for example, by Francis Scott Key. The Battle of Fort McHenry took place here. During the Civil War, which happened after Poe's death, of course. It was the only time in history that cannons were actually aimed at an American city. It's a little tidbit of military history there for you. But the it was a major port of trade and information, knowledge, and I think that's what attracted people here.
Well, yeah,
and it had an ambiance to it.
It was the capital of the U.S. for a while.
For a while, yeah. Mm-hmm. It yep. was indeed, no doubt about that. I just realized something, that my great-grandmother was born 2 years after Edgar Allan Poe died. She was born in 1851.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing? You know how scary that is, Vince, to realize that your great-grandmother was 9 years old when Abraham Lincoln was elected president?
Wow.
It's a little scary, isn't it? Looking back a bit. Yeah, I mean, Baltimore is a very interesting town. Obviously, there's just lost Mr. Cummings, and there was a big battle there between our president and him, and talking about Baltimore. Baltimore's had its ups and downs. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, yes. It's recently been in the news, unfortunately, because of comments made by President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate because it is my hometown. I was born and raised in Baltimore City. And I love this town. I'm an Orioles fan to some degree. not in the sports necessarily, but I support the Orioles and the Baltimore Ravens. And the Baltimore Ravens, of course, named after Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
Okay, well, since you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, I'll just you just say thank you for giving you Matt Burke to win the Super Bowl from Minnesota.
Well, I'm a fan only because I'm from Baltimore. I don't really keep up with the Ravens, to be perfectly honest with you. I know some people are probably booing me right now as you listen to this.
Yes, I'm sure they are.
But I support them as a football team, but I'm not in the football enough to actually know what's going on with them right now. So another myth associated with Edgar. Speaking of sports, Edgar Allan Poe was pretty good at rugby. And he,
really?
Despite what you may have heard, unlike many athletes today, Edgar Allan Poe never did drugs.
Hmm.
No physical enhancement. He didn't have the big lats and everything.
No, that's right.
I can't really see Edgar Allan Poe weightlifting. I just can't picture that.
I don't know that they had hypodermic needles in 1830.
Yeah, they might not have. That's true. Yeah, probably true.
Or opium. That was a very common myth associated with Edgar Allan Poe. I have an excerpt from a Dr. Carter Woodbury, a friend of his. He says, in his own opinion, I incline to the view that Poe began to use of the use of drugs in Baltimore, that his periods of absence from liquor were periods of less moderate indulgence in opium. However, as he never met Poe, it offers no evidence to support this position. Woodbury's conjecture may best be ignored. All of his friends have said he's never indulged in opium or any opiates at all, you know, which were readily available off the shelf at that time period. I mean, you could just go into a drugstore and literally buy opium.
They knew how to live.
So, yeah. And so every friend Poe has ever had has said that Poe has never indulged in drugs. So this is one of those rumors that got spread by someone who didn't even know Edgar Allan Poe. But why do we believe these things? Why do we believe all this stuff about Edgar Allan Poe? Well, it involves this literary enemy, an individual who would go down in history as one of America's worst jerks. Okay.
That's a long list.
Yeah.
I thought it was me.
All right. Well, check this out. First of all, he is the Lex Luthor to Edgar Allan Poe's Superman. He's a Moriarty to a Sherlock Holmes, basically. Although they never did battle directly, necessarily. This guy, I don't want to say his name, okay? So this guy, he has a villain name. In fact, I'd imagine if you were walked up to him and someone introduced you as this person, you would immediately say, I don't trust this guy, just from his name. His name is Rufus Griswold.
Yeah, Rufus Griswold. I just called him RG.
Yep, RG was a notorious a-hole, to be honest with you.
You got to be known for something.
Yes. Yeah. You notorious a-hole. I love that, Vince. I love it.
So he was known to accept bribes he did poetry and stories himself, but he's obviously largely forgotten and is known as a villain throughout history. But he was known for accepting bribes to have your poems or, you know, stories in his collected works volumes he would print out every year. So he'd print out a collection of works from different authors and writers and poets, and he would reprint them in his collected works. And he would accept bribes. So if you had like something like roses are red, violets are blue, he would put that in his collected works if you gave him enough money. It's like, slip him a $5 under the table, and your next thing you know, your poetry is in his book. All right? So Griswold did think that Edgar Allan Poe had written a review of one of his stories. But because the review was anonymous, there was really no proof of that. We still don't know this to this day if it was actually Edgar Allan Poe. Might have been probable that it was him, but we don't know for sure. But Griswold thought he knew for sure and just hated him from that point on. He would, spread rumors about Poe and that sort of thing. And Poe was, for as far as we know, totally oblivious to this. This wasn't like a Westinghouse Edison sort of thing. He was oblivious to it. He did not understand that this guy was mocking him, and he thought it was a joke, basically, and he treated it as such. But it gets worse. All right?
Vince, do you mind if I take a two-minute break and come right back?
Do I have a choice to mind it or not?
No, well, yes, you do. I mean, if you have to get going, I don't want to cut you off.
No, I'm not. Go ahead. You're fine.
Okay, we'll be back in 2 minutes more with Vince Wilson. We're talking Edgar Allan Poe with the family.
What are the things you want to avoid when it comes time to sell your home? Hey, it's Tom with my realtor, Chris Lindahl. If you're like most people, it's things like open houses, staging, decluttering, repairs, maintenance, and all the people coming through your house.
Hey, Tom, the Guaranteed Offer Program from Chris Lindahl Real Estate was created for people like you so that you can avoid the things that you don't like doing when it comes time to sell your home. We have been presenting offers for homes in most price ranges. Homeowners are loving our Guaranteed Offer Program, especially how much money they are making on their home sale without the inconveniences.
So this program is for all price ranges and conditions, including perfectly maintained homes?
Most homes do qualify. To see if your home qualifies, go to chrislindahl.com and click Get Offer right now. Will you be the next homeowner to accept an offer from our Guaranteed Offer Program? Find out now. If you qualify, you will get an offer in 48 hours or less. And the best part is you get to pick a closing date that is convenient for you and close in as little as 3 weeks.
Go to chrislindahl.com right now to see if you qualify or call 763-401-SOLD. That is 763-401-SOLD.
S-O-L-D.
Tom here for Saber Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Right now, Saber and Bryant are teaming up to offer 0% financing for 36 months when you buy a new Bryant furnace. This is the perfect time to replace your old furnace with a new trouble-free, energy-efficient furnace from Saber. And when you buy Bryant equipment, you're getting one of the most trusted names in the industry. This 0% offer is available for a limited time. Call Saber Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning to find out more, and please tell them that Tom sent you. Saber and Bryant, whatever it takes.
I was looking in the lab late one night when my eyes...
Okay, what's his name? Because I had to correct it on the morning show because I had it wrong. What is the singer's name? Vince, do you know the singer's name here?
I'm afraid I don't. I can barely do it.
He did the mash, he did the monster mash.
We just listened to this while covering pumpkins last night, and Alexa
Boris Karloff.
Boris was his, he used it as a middle name. Boris was his middle name.
What was it? I don't know.
His initials would be, with the Boris, would be BBP.
Brad Boris.
No.
Brad Peterson.
Bobby Boris. Bobby Boris Pickett. Was his name?
Boris.
And the Crypt Kickers.
The Crypt Kicker Crypt 5. The Crypt Kicker 5. Don't forget the Crypt Kicker 5. Absolutely. Vince Wilson with us. We're talking about Edgar Allan Poe, a great subject to talk about on Halloween day and night. All right. So back to to Griswold, who's a total pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah. So Poe dies on October 9th, 1849. And I'm sorry, October 7th, 1849, on October 9th, 1849, an obituary appeared in the New York Tribune, okay? And I'm going to read you an excerpt or two from this.
All right.
Okay, now he wrote this as under an assumed name. He didn't use his real name, but everyone knew who it was. And it was later revealed certainly that it definitely 100% was Rufus Griswold. Here's how it begins. Check this out. Edgar Allan Poe is dead. He died in Baltimore the day before yesterday. This announcement will startle many, but few will be grieved by it.
Ooh.
Wow. That's cold. Well,
opinion pieces even in an obit.
That's right.
I have a question for you, Vince. So Rufus Griswold, he didn't make very much money, did he?
Oh, he did. He did, actually.
Oh, did he?
He was certainly wealthier than Poe was. Poe had suffered through poverty.
Yeah,
we're going to get to that in a minute because he was actually on his way to success because he had gone on before his death, he had gone on a fundraising tour to raise money for a magazine called The Stylist. But he raised a little over $2,000, which would have been a quarter of a million today, something along those lines, like a huge amount of money. He was on his way to success. With that kind of money, he would have been able to open his dream job of having a literary magazine. And he probably would have done very well with that. But he disappeared. The money was never seen again, which leads to some of the theories in regards to what happened to him. But Griswold, finishing up that story with him and why people believe he's missed today, most of this comes from Griswold tricking Edgar Allan Poe's aunt, who inherited all of his collected works, tricked his aunt into signing over to Griswold the rights to his books, his stories, his poems, everything. And then, after he got the rights to it, he published collections of the works and put in front of every single book his own biography that he wrote that slandered Poe in it, bringing up the rumors of opium addiction, womanizing, and alcoholism, and that he was a terrible, rising cad, basically.
Sounds like something my ex-wife would have done.
Oh, which one? Hey, it's great to be here.
This guy would have loved Twitter.
he would have loved Twitter, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. He would have Facebook, Twitter, he would have been all over it. He would have had his own Facebook page for sure. So Griswold was, like I said, the best way to describe him is a major a-hole. There's just no
major
other
a-hole. I like it.
Major a-hole. That's right. This is his last name. This is his real last name. Griswold was awful. He was every way the villain, and his name definitely deserves to be dragged through the mud for it. So Vince, everyone makes mistakes.
If it was if it wasn't about the money, then it had to be about the name. Was that what he was upset? So I know that he thinks that Edgar Allan Poe, you know, slandered him or something, but what was he really meant? Because most often when you got somebody attacking someone like that, it's all about the money or the success someone has had. It's just jealousy, isn't it?
I think it's jealousy, envy. Poe had real talent.
Yep.
Griswold was mostly known for just publishing collections of books. You know, he took other people's works, put them together into a collection, and published them as that, you know. Although he did write his own stuff, no one knows who he is today. And no. I've never even bothered to look up his stuff because that would give him some degree of respect, I think.
Yes.
Poe was a natural talent. He is the father of the modern detective story, which he doesn't get enough credit. Everyone thinks it's Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and Doyle definitely acknowledges Poe as the real father of modern detective stories, with stories like Murders at the Rue Morgue, for example. In which he created the Paris detective in there. Poe was definitely a literary giant. You know, he actually invented the term short stories.
Oh, he did?
Yes. The idea was around, just no one ever called it anything. Poe was a literary giant even at the time, although he was always suffering in poverty because another thing that a lot of people don't know, he's one of the first, if not the first, professional writer. That was not a concept before. Sure, there were people who wrote for a living, and that's all they did, but they didn't count because they were from wealthy families. I mean, they owned land. They inherited land, which paid for everything. So they didn't have to, do anything but sit around and write and paint all day long. But Poe struggled because he was a professional writer. He wrote for a living, and that is where the struggle came from. That's why he was in poverty all the time, because he didn't do anything else, and there was no concept of what he was trying to accomplish or do. So the stylist would have been his way of success. And, that, of course, that brings us to the long-awaited, how did Edgar Allan Poe die? So he went on a train trip around the Northeast United States in the Mid-Atlantic, going around to friends and colleagues, that sort of thing, raising money, loans to start the Stylist magazine, which he had all this faith in. And realistically, that would have been a change in his life. At 40 years old, he was changing his life around, and he was on his way to real success and at least a comfortable living, if not wealth itself. And then when he gets back, no one knows what happened. He got up the train station, and even that's not technically reported, but we assume he got up the train station, disappeared at some point, and it appears at Gunner's Hall. He's disheveled. He's helped into the hall. But he got in there as, you know, with a little bit of assistance. He wasn't on the sidewalk or in the street, but he was just disheveled, delirious. Someone recognized him. They called for help. Dr. Snodgrass came in. I love these names back then. Dr. Snodgrass came and helped him out. They brought him to Church Home Hospital, where he died 3 days later. Like I said, no one knows exactly what happened to him, but there are theories. There's dozens of theories, actually, but four stand out above all else. All right. One very popular theory, and I think that's mostly to do with his wife dying from tuberculosis, is that he died from TB. But although TB can be in your system for years, it is not a quick death. All right. Usually, anyway, you can get it and then take weeks to months to die from it. Poe was gone. He seemed healthy enough when he left, came back and died, you know, basically. So it's probably not tuberculosis. I think that mostly started from the fact that his wife died. And it's kind of a romantic idea that he died for the same thing instead of his wife. OK, she was only 26 years old when she passed away.
Oh, God.
So the there is another theory, of course, is that he was murdered. You know,
murdered.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, the so he was sharing a home with Mrs. Clem in New York, and we're in the same little cottage where Virginia, his wife, had died in 1847. And on June 29th, 1849, Poe began to lecture tour to raise money, for the magazine The Stylus, all right? He first went to Philadelphia, then to Richmond, then Norfolk. While in Richmond, he reunited with a childhood sweetheart, Amara Royster Shelton. And he courted her, and he intended to marry at some point. It's another motivation for him to try to raise his money. Although her parents not excited about it because Poe was always known to be poor, but he was raising money and trying to make better for himself. According to their account, he was quite sober and cheerful to the last, remarking as he took leave of them that he would soon be in Richmond again. This is quoted from The Last Days of Edgar Allan Poe, a book written a while back. All right, taking a boat from Richmond on September 27th, Poe arrived in Baltimore on September 28th, 1849. Over the next few days, details about Poe's actions and whereabouts are uncertain. Even his Baltimore cousin, Nielsen Poe, wrote to Maria Clem on October 11th, where he spent the time he was here, or under what circumstances, I have been unable to ascertain. And by the way, if you want more information like what I'm quoting to you right now, go to eapoe.org. That's a website that's run by Jeff Savoy, a Poe scholar here in Baltimore City, and it's one of the greatest resources for Poe information. It can give you all sorts of references of books you should read, and he quotes heavily on here. He's been maintaining it for years. All right? Poe left Richmond. He had over $2,000 with him, and then on October 3rd, 1849, when Joseph Walker sent the following note to Dr. Snodgrass. This Walker is who found him. "Dear sir, there is a gentleman rather the worse for wear at Ryan's Fourth Ward Polls, who goes under the cognomen of Edgar A. Poe, and who appears in great distress. And he says he is acquainted with you, and I assure you he is in need of immediate assistance. Yours in haste, Joseph W. Walker." Ryan's Fourth Ward Polls, also known as Gunner's Hall, was a tavern. Such places were often used as election poll places at the time. Wouldn't that be great today if you just go to the election poll and have a beer?
Yeah, exactly. Go squeal up a storm. Now we're talking.
Yeah, that's right. There appears to be no foundation for tradition of Poe found in a gutter, although it was at least possible that Walker came across Poe and helped him in the street and helped him inside. Or into a nearby public house to wait for the arrival of his friend. Now, I want to point out that Dr. Snodgrass is another source of rumors and myths about Poe's alcoholism. Snodgrass was a major, supporter of the temperance movement, which Poe was also a member of at the time. So Snodgrass had spread rumors after Poe's death that Poe was drunk when he was found. This is not true. Snodgrass did that because he was thinking, well, if the great author and writer, the poet Edgar Allan Poe, had been killed by alcoholism, then this would motivate people to not be drunk or drink alcohol because he could kill such a great man. You know, so he had selfish motivations in order to propagate Poe once again as a drunk. So it wasn't just Snodgrass doing this, although there's argument to say, it wasn't just Griswold, it was Snodgrass too. There's argument to say that Snodgrass had a noble motivation, but it's still, you're slandering this guy's name, and he called you a friend. So that kind of is a bad thing to do. So Poe was described as having a stained, faded, old bombazine coat, pantaloons of a similar character, a pair of worn-out shoes run down to the heels, and an old straw hat, which totally goes against everything that Poe would have ever found himself dead or alive in, no pun intended, or sarcasm intended. A rusty, almost brimless, tattered, ribbonless palm leaf hat is how Snodgrass described it. His clothing consisted of a sack coat of thin and sleazy black alpaca, ripped more or less at several of its seams, and faded and soiled in pants of a steel mixed pattern of cassinate, half worn, and badly fitting. If he could fit, it could be said to fit at all. He wore either a vest or neckcloth, while the bosom of his shirt was both crumpled and badly soiled.
What a weekend.
Yeah, what a weekend.
It's all true. Yeah. On his feet were boots of coarse material and given no sign of having been blackened for a long time, if at all. It's funny how they're criticizing him for not having a neck collar or polished boots.
Right.
Because these guys are snobs, basically.
Vince,
go ahead.
How do people get a hold of you? We have about a minute left. How do people get a hold of you to hear the rest of the story?
Oh, you can go to posemagic.com, which is a website I run for the things I do in Baltimore City, or you can check me out at ghosttech.com for the paranormal stuff I do. I'll be updating that website very soon. Of course, just follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those places. Vince Wilson, Vince Wilson Magic. I'm also I also run the page the Baltimore Society of Paranormal Research, or BSBR, on Facebook as well. So you can find me there, all those places. Or just send me an email at vince@ghosttech.com.
Thank you, Vince. Great talking to you, sir.
Likewise.
Have a good day. We'll be back with the family.